Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
It took 15 hours for 400 French firefighters to put out the fire at the 850-year-old Notre-Dame de Paris Cathedral. The cathedral, one of Paris's most famous landmarks, lost its spire and roof, but still has its iconic bell towers. The Crown of Thorns, one of the cathedral's treasures, was rescued. The crown is believed to have been worn by Jesus Christ at the time of his crucifixion. Other religious statues were removed last week from the cathedral roof as part of the restoration of the church's spire. Officials said the world-famous 18th-century organ that has 8,000 pipes also appeared to have survived. But no one can tell whether it has been damaged by water or will need to be restored. There is also little information on the condition of the cathedral's stained glass windows and its many paintings. A spokesman for Paris's firefighters said on Tuesday morning, "The entire fire is out." He added that workers were surveying the movement of the structure and the contents in it. The Archbishop of Paris, Michel Aupetit, told RMC Radio, "Notre-Dame was destroyed, but the soul of France was not." Officials consider the fire to be an accident, possibly as a result of the restoration work at the cathedral. However, investigators will be interviewing people who worked on the cathedral's roof, where the flames first started. French President Emmanuel Macron visited the site on the River Seine Monday night. He pledged that Notre-Dame would be rebuilt. He called the structure a part of us, referring to the country of France, and he asked for help repairing it. Germany and Poland were among the countries that offered assistance. "We are united in sorrow. Notre-Dame is part of the cultural heritage of mankind and a symbol for Europe," German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas wrote on Twitter. French businessmen have also pledged hundreds of millions of euros for reconstruction, including Bernard Arnault, France's richest businessman, and François-Henri Pinault and his billionaire father, François Pinault. Even so, repairing the cathedral, including the wooden beams that made up its roof, presents problems. Bertrand de Feydeau is the vice president of preservation group Fondation du Patrimoine. In an interview with the Associated Press, he noted that the cathedral's roof cannot be rebuilt exactly as it was before the fire, because we don't, at the moment, have trees on our territory of the size that were cut in the 13th century. He added that the roof restoration work would have to use new technologies. For Olivier Lebib, who has lived in Paris for 40 years, it is necessary for the cathedral to be restored to its former glory. Notre Dame is our sister. It is so sad. We are all mourning. Parisians, French people, tourists, the Chinese, the whole planet, he said. Thank God that the stone structure has withstood the fire. I'm John Russell.
This is What's Trending Today. A dog found swimming more than 220 kilometers off the coast of Thailand has been returned safely to land. Late last week, workers on an oil rig noticed the animal all alone in the water. It began swimming toward the side of the structure. The dog was able to get itself onto a solid area. He appeared cold, tired, and fearful. The workers lowered a rope and secured it around the dog. Then they worked together to pull the animal up to safety. The crew that found the dog quickly gave their new friend a name, Punrat. The name means something similar to survivor in the Thai language. One of those workers was Vittisok Payalau. He has been providing updates on Punrat on his Facebook page. He said it was lucky that the crew noticed the dog in the water. If there had been waves, he said, the animal likely would not have been seen. No one knows how Punrat ended up all alone at sea or how long he had been out there. But Vittisok and others have suggested the animal might have fallen off a fishing boat. On Monday, Punrat arrived on dry land. A team of animal doctors was waiting for him in the southern Thai province of Songkhla. Workers at the Songkhla port also welcomed the dog with neck rubs and a special welcome necklace made of yellow flowers. Many people took pictures with Punrat. Vittisok wrote on Facebook, "Today, a vessel transporting the dog arrived on shore at around 10 a.m. His overall condition has improved. He is getting stronger and can smile." The dog is now in the care of an animal doctor in Songkhla. The animal protection group Watchdog Thailand said he is in good condition and getting stronger. On Tuesday, the group published pictures of Punrat getting washed and getting plenty of love and attention. Vittisok says that if no one claims Punrat as their pet, he will take him with him to his home in northeast Thailand. And that's What's Trending Today.
If you want to make sure that you understand this story as fully as possible, you might consider printing the article and reading it on paper. That is one of the findings of a recent study of research done on the differences between paper and screen reading. Virginia Clinton carried out the research examination. She is a professor of education, health, and behavior at the University of North Dakota. She found what she called a small but significant difference in reading text from screen versus paper. Researchers have been investigating for years the ways in which screens affect the quality of a person's reading. The magazine Scientific American reported that at least 100 studies have been published on the issue since the 1980s. Until the early 1990s, most studies found that people read more slowly and with less accuracy on screens than on paper. However, later studies show more mixed results. Some continue to report findings similar to those earlier studies. Others suggested technological improvements over the years had improved reading quality on screens.
Clinton's aim was to bring together some of the most recent findings on reading performance, reading speed, and a skill known as metacognition. Clinton looked at 33 past studies that examined paper versus screen reading. All of the studies were done between 2008 and 2018. The studies collectively had 2,799 study subjects, including both children and adults. All were native English speakers and had usual reading skills for their age. Clinton's examination found that reading from paper generally led to better understanding and improved a person's performance on tests connected to the reading material. And she found no major differences in reading speed between the two. In other words, paper reading was found to be more efficient. Such differences were notable only when the reading materials were expository texts, or explanatory and based on fact. Clinton said she found no major differences when it came to narrative fictional texts.
Clinton also found that paper readers usually have a higher recognition of how well they have understood a text than screen readers. This skill is called metacognition. The word cognition means the mental action of increasing knowledge and understanding. Metacognition simply means thinking about one's own thinking. Clinton and other researchers have found screen readers often believe they understand a text better than they really do. And they are more likely than paper readers to overestimate how well they would do on a test of the materials they have read. Clinton said this is common among all readers. She said, "We think that we're reading the story or the book better than we actually are. We think we understand what we are reading better than how we are actually reading. Yet, this inflated sense of understanding, or overconfidence, is especially common among screen readers." Clinton said there are many possible reasons for such findings. Overconfidence of screen readers, for example, could be the result of a distracted, less focused mind.
Reader preference is also important, she said. Research shows the majority of people of all ages prefer reading from paper. But if someone prefers screen reading to paper reading, that person's understanding of the material is not likely to suffer. Clinton said, "If you are enjoying the reading process, you are going to be more involved. You are going to be paying better attention. Preferences are a key issue here." Several studies have found that people often think of paper materials as more important and serious. If you are reading from paper, your mind thinks, "This is something important. I need to pay attention to it," Clinton said. Readers might connect computer screens with fun, less serious activities, such as checking social media or watching Netflix. That, Clinton said, could explain why most studies find no major difference in screen and paper among narrative fictional reading materials. Clinton described this kind of reading as enjoyment reading.
Although her findings may support paper reading over screen reading, Clinton says she does not believe screen reading should be avoided. Instead, she points to new and developing tools that can be used to improve a screen reader's understanding and focus.
For example, when you're reading off of a screen, it can be programmed that you have to answer questions and get them right before you can continue. Paper can't make you do that.
Other tools in development will offer students reading at a lower level more simple texts, while providing their other classmates more complex versions of the same text. Clinton said, "I think the answer or appropriate response to seeing findings like mine is to think of, okay, what can screen do that paper can't do?" Clinton's findings were published earlier this year in the Journal of Research in Reading. She also presented her results this month at the American Educational Research Association's yearly meeting, held in Toronto, Canada. I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1914, Europe exploded into the First World War. It was a war no nation really wanted, but no nation seemed able to stop it. The assassination of Austria's Archduke Franz Ferdinand in the city of Sarajevo was the spark that set off the explosion. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about the war and how it affected the United States under President Woodrow Wilson.
The Austrian Archduke was murdered by Serbian nationalists. They opposed Austrian control of their homeland. After the assassination, Austria declared war on Serbia. One of Serbia's allies was Russia. Russia agreed to help Serbia in any war against Austria. Austria had allies, too. The most important was Germany. Germany wanted Russia to stay out of the war. When Russia refused, Germany declared war on Russia. Then Germany declared war on Russia's close ally, France. Britain entered the war a few days later, when Germany violated the neutrality of Belgium.
One nation after another entered the conflict to protect its friends or to honor its treaties. Within a week, most of Europe was at war. On one side were the Central Powers, Germany and Austria-Hungary. On the other side were the Triple Entente allies, France, Britain, and Russia. Many other nations took sides. Bulgaria and Turkey joined the Central Powers. Italy, Romania, Portugal, and Greece joined the Allies.
The United States hoped to stay out of the war. President Wilson immediately declared American neutrality. He said, "It is a war with which we have nothing to do, whose causes cannot touch us." Most Americans agreed with President Wilson. They did not want to get involved in the fighting. However, many found it difficult to remain neutral in their hearts. Some Americans had family roots in Germany. They supported the Central Powers. A greater number of Americans had family roots in Britain or France. They supported the Allies. Yet the official American policy was neutrality. The United States planned to continue to trade with both sides.
Germany and Austria expected a quick victory in the war. They were caught between two powerful enemies, Russia and France. But German military leaders were not worried. They had a battle plan they were sure would succeed. The German generals planned to strike quickly at France with most of the German army. They expected to defeat France in a short time and then turn to fight Russia. In this way, the German army would not have to fight both enemies at the same time.
At first, the plan worked. 2 million German soldiers swept across Belgium and into France. They rushed forward toward Paris, hoping for a fast victory. But the German commanders made a mistake. They pushed their men too fast. When British and French forces struck back outside Paris, the tired and worn German soldiers could not hold their positions. The battle was fierce and unbelievably bloody. In the end, the Germans were forced to withdraw. The German withdrawal gave the Allies time to prepare strong defenses. There was no chance now for a quick German victory. Instead, it would be a long war, with Germany and Austria facing enemies on two sides. Britain and France were on the west, Russia was on the east.
The Allies took immediate steps to reduce Germany's trade with the rest of the world. The British Navy began seizing war supplies found on neutral ships sailing toward German ports. It then expanded its efforts to block food exports to Germany. The blockade by Britain and the other Allies was very successful. Germany faced possible starvation. Its navy was not strong enough to break the blockade with surface ships. Its only hope was to break the blockade with another naval weapon, submarines. Germany announced that it would use its submarines to sink any ship that came near the coast of Britain. The threat included ships from neutral nations that tried to continue trading with the Allies.
The United States and other neutral nations immediately protested the German announcement. They said it was a clear violation of international law. When a German submarine sank a British ship in the Irish Sea, one of the victims was an American citizen. A few weeks later, an American oil ship was damaged during a sea battle between British Navy ships and a German submarine. Then came the most serious incident of all. It involved a British passenger ship called the Lusitania. The Lusitania was sailing from New York City to Britain when it was attacked by a German submarine. The Lusitania sank in 18 minutes. 1,200 persons were killed. 129 were Americans.
The sinking of the Lusitania shocked and horrified the American people. They called it mass murder. They turned against Germany. President Wilson warned that he might declare war on Germany if Germany continued to sink civilian ships. Germany did not want war with the United States. It already faced a strong fight against the European allies. It promised not to sink any more civilian ships without warning, and it offered regrets for the Lusitania incident.
President Wilson accepted Germany's apology. Like most Americans, he hoped to stay out of the bloody European struggle. And he also knew that the record of the Allies was not completely clean. For example, he was troubled by reports of mass hunger in Germany. He and other Americans felt the British food blockade was cruel. They also were shocked by the way British forces brutally crushed a rebellion in Ireland at the time. Most of all, the American people were sickened by reports of what was happening on the battlefields of Europe. The armies were using poison gas and other terrible weapons. Soldiers on both sides were dying by the millions. The war had become a bloodbath.
The United States had a presidential election in 1916. President Wilson won the nomination of the Democratic Party to seek re-election. Democrats around the country shouted their support with these words, "He kept us out of war." Wilson himself did not like the words. He felt it raised false hopes. But people continued to say it because they did not want war.
The Republican Party nominated Supreme Court Justice Charles Evans Hughes as its candidate for president. Hughes was a moderate Republican. He supported a number of social reforms. Like Wilson, Hughes promised to keep the United States neutral. However, one of his supporters was former President Theodore Roosevelt, and Roosevelt called for strong American policies that could lead to war. Roosevelt's words led many Americans to see Wilson as the candidate of peace and Hughes as the candidate of war.
Voting in the presidential election was very close. At first, it seemed Hughes had won. He went to bed on election night, believing he would be America's next president. But voting results later that night confirmed Wilson as the winner. The election was so close, the Republicans did not accept defeat for 2 weeks. Woodrow Wilson had won another term. During that term, he would find it increasingly difficult to honor the words of the campaign, "He kept us out of war." Finally, he would find it impossible. The United States entered World War I while Woodrow Wilson was president.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.